Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Top Flight Pod. You know what it is. You know what we're here to do. Back on screen today, beautiful Austin, Texas. I'm your host, Hernan. You can call me H. Tonight, I'm joined by my G, Neftali Ochoa. You can call him Nef, but I'll let him introduce himself. Nef, how are you doing tonight, bro? Welcome to the show once again.
Well, thanks for having me once again on here. Happy to come and talk some Austin FC, maybe some Europe later on, but it's a great weather today. So it's beautiful day in Austin.
You know, we mentioned Europe, bro. A lot of stuff happened across the pond. We had probably the robbery of the century in the Real Madrid versus Valencia game, something that even Pat McAfee, a NFL NBA commentator, he even said MLS would never let something like that happen. But it didn't stop there. I mean, that made the rounds, you know. It wasn't just La Liga. It wasn't just in Europe. It made it all the way back to the United States. You know, also you had the Manchester Derby go on today. You had Man City absolutely thump Man United, making Manchester blue. But, of course, you know, we got to start off with Austin FC because they got a valuable point in Seattle at Lumen Field. Now, there was a lot of conversation there yesterday on social media about how to go about this point. Is it valuable? Is it, I guess some fans were calling it a bit of an embarrassing performance, but that's what we're here for tonight. We're going to talk about it, and I'm excited to get into the show. But before we do get into it, I want to send a special shout out to everybody on the Discord, all of our Patreon members. Thank you for the support in this season that we're going to about to embark pretty much. We already started off with it, but it feels like it's going to be a long one. And just once again, shout out to everybody that's on Patreon and on Discord. The conversations on there are absolutely fun. And the Fantasy Footy League that we have on there, it's a $100 pot for the winner. So we'll see who it goes to. Currently, I'm in first place, but there's matches that need to be played. And I think I'm going to fall to about third place because I'm only in the lead by 2 points. Now, before everybody says that it's rigged, just know I'm not the admin. I didn't organize the league. I just put the prize out there. So whoever wins it, you'll get $100. Hopefully it's me so I can get myself a nice little, I don't know, a nice new hat from the Austin FC store. I don't know. Maybe two beers because the prices have gone up. But Nef, let's get into the show, bro. Now, it was a little bit difficult to think about where we're going to start off tonight's pod, because there was some media availability with Alex Ring and Josh Wolf midweek where, you know, Josh Wolf kind of gave us a timeline on Sebastian Drussi and Leo Weisselin, or maybe not really a timeline on Drussi, but he gave us a little bit more of an update. You know, he said that he was going to be out. Well, he was a questionable for Seattle. You know, he says that he hopes that he gets him back soon. And then we hear him say about Leo Weisselin that he'll be out 4 to 8 weeks. Now, before we heard that from Wolf officially, we saw a post from Cap City Soccer, shout out to them to do great work, where they came out and they said how Leo Weisselin was going to be out 4 to 8 weeks. Now, I think that was a bit of an estimate based off what plantar fasciitis is. But later on, we did get confirmation from Coach Wolf himself that Gaffer saying he'll be out for around 2 months. So, Nef, you know, we don't want to spend too much time on the media availability. It's just a real recap. But what did you get from the words that you heard from, you know, Coach Wolf and also Alex Ring, who was very he was very real, very open about their performance against Minnesota. He pretty much took all ownership of that, you know, saying that they gave away the first half and they can't win a game when they give away 45 minutes like that. But I ask you again, what was your thoughts on the words that we heard from those two guys midweek?
Oh, I think especially going into the Seattle game and what it turned into, I think it was a bit of a mismatch of sorts. I mean, Ring talking the way that he did and then the game, the way that it was performed against Seattle, I think it left a lot to be desired. And just like we've talked about before the season started, it's just what these guys say, we've got to take it with a grain of salt the moment until results start coming in, because words at this point, words really don't mean much.
Well, you know, words are one thing, Nef, and what you do on the pitch is something else. Now, we heard from Josh Wolf, from Alex Ring, what they had to say, and really it's kind of building up into, you know, the Seattle game that we're about to get into. But before we unpack what happened in the match, I do want to talk about the short-term agreements, Nef, that were announced the morning before the game. Now, we get the announcement from Austin FC, the communications department, saying that Valentin Noel, Antonio Gomez, and Salvatore Mazzaferro have all been signed to a short-term agreement for Austin FC, of course, ahead of the match against Seattle. Now, there was some people asking, like, hey, well, what does this mean? You know, what does this exactly mean for the boys? And then, you know, on the Instagram caption for the post that we put out, and I'm going to read what is pretty much from the MLS regulations. You know, they say, per the 2024 MLS roster rules and regulations, a club may sign a player age 25 or younger from its MLS Next Pro team to a max of 4 short-term agreements up to 4-day contracts each season, a maximum of 16 total days. An individual player may be included on up to 4 MLS League season match rosters each season. However, that player may appear in no more than 2 MLS League season matches. An individual player may appear in a number of non-league games during the terms of this 4 short-term agreements. So we get that bit of information there from the league. And whenever that was announced, Neff, there was a lot of fans that were very excited, especially for a guy like Valentin Noel, who I thought was the only name of the three that could possibly sniff out some minutes against Seattle based off of the position that he plays in. And obviously Drewsy being out, that 10th spot, we see Valentin Noel with 3 goals in preseason. Of course, it is against certain opponents. Now you're in league play and things get real. But I was really thinking that Valentin Noel was going to sniff out some minutes against Seattle. But when the official lineup came out, which we're going to talk about here in a bit, we see that one of those names was left off, and it was Salvatore Mazzaferro. I was a bit of a surprise. Personally, I would have fancied Salvatore over Antonio Gomez, who was in the lineup with Valentin Noel. But I wonder if maybe last minute Salvatore maybe had a problem, you know, maybe a little bit of a knock or whatever. But anyways, he was left off of that team sheet, and it was only Antonio Gomez and Valentin Noel. So, Nev, I want to get your thoughts on the short-term agreements. Of course, you know, you're a big Valentin Noel guy, and maybe you see maybe you saw the reason why I thought Valentino was going to get some minutes based off of how he's been performing with the team in preseason. But what did you think when you saw the announcement from Austin FC that these three guys were going to be signed on the short-term agreement?
Well, the initial thought, you know, I hope they better get some minutes, you know, because it's almost, I don't know if the word is disrespectful, but it definitely brings their hopes up of them being able to get minutes. I mean, it's one thing if they're constantly on the first team roster and they're just not getting called up, but it's another thing to get called up and then you're just there for nothing. And I mean, I can only imagine what it feels like as a professional player to get excited and you're just there as a placeholder. I think it must be hard. I personally don't like how those contracts are being, because you only get 4 of those per season.
Well, I mean also
per player per season, I think.
Yeah, the terminology on that is very interesting. You need a master's degree in MLS to really understand what's going on. But what I wanted to say, Neff, is I feel like whenever you're a young guy, you know, you're in the supplemental area, you know, I feel like this comes with it, right? And it could be, you know, them getting their hopes up, especially for Valentin Noel, which it's that international roster spot that's holding him back from being signed onto this team. But I feel like, you know, whenever you're a young player coming into a team like Austin, you know, in Major League Soccer, sometimes things like this are going to happen. It's just part of being a young player. Although Valentino is incredibly talented, I don't know if it's unfair. I think, just like I said, I think it just comes with it, Neff. But I really wanted to see Valentino get minutes. I was very sad that he didn't. But hey, we just move forward from that. Now, anything else you want to add, brother, on that topic before we get into the injury report?
The only thing is, you know, especially in Noel's case, I feel like you're speaking about like 19, 18, 17 year olds. And that's not the case. I mean, for a player like Valentin Noel, he really should be already on a first team roster consistently. And honestly, I think he has the qualities and capabilities to do so. And I almost feel like his talent is being wasted here.
Interesting, mate. I think a lot of people that are listening to this pod would agree with you on that. The fact that Valentin Noel's talent, you know, he's not, just like you said, he's not an 18-year-old kid anymore. He's not a 19-year-old kid anymore. He's in his 20s, right? So, you know, he's out of college. He had a great time. Where did he go to Pitt or something like that with Jackson Bolte, who is probably his number one fan. He's always quote tweeting him and saying, why hasn't he been signed? Why haven't you picked him up, Austin FC? So everybody get a friend like Jackson Walty. Everybody needs somebody like that in their corner. But we go back to Valentino well. You know, this guy's very talented. He was the MVP in the final for the MLS Next Pro. You know what he brings to the table. You know how he's been performing in preseason. But the fact that that international roster spot is holding him back, it really just gets me upset, because Austin FC is pretty much saying, like, hey, we know you're good, but we don't think you're that good to give you an international roster spot. And I see where you're saying that, where that can be a little bit disrespectful. And, hey, why should he wait until Austin FC decides that they want to give him that international roster spot? And he could be hitting, you know, hitting the road soon. And I would understand him 100%.
Especially the way the team is performing. I mean, what you have is not working, why not try something new with new players?
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Now, with the other two boys, Gomez and Mazzaferro, you know, it'll be a little bit harder for them to get on the field, because you have Cascante, you have Matt Hedges, Leveson is injured, of course, but they have ranks to go through in this center back position. Now, I want to move forward to the injury report for Austin FC ahead of the Seattle Sounders match, because although for Seattle, it was lengthy, it was eight players that they had out. I'll read those names here in a bit. I want to start off with Austin's, because although ours only had three names, two of them were for injury, they really, really hurt us in this game, especially Sebastian Drussi. Now, who are we talking about? We're talking about Lev Eisen. Of course, he had the plantar fasciitis, out 4 to 8 weeks, around 2 months is what we were told. We also had Brendan Heinzeik, who had no injury, but I think Wolf said for personal reasons, Brendan Heinzeik was not playing against Seattle. He was out 100%. And then, of course, the main man, the Austin talisman, the captain, the main DP, El Crack, Drussi Dior, he's out again. He was out against Minnesota, the home opener. We saw what happened there. He's out against Seattle. We see what happened there as well. He's out for a hamstring injury. Now, he was questionable for Seattle. You and I knew that he wasn't going to play. You know, I felt like early on it was kind of obvious that he didn't even travel with the team based on what was being posted on social media by the club. But later on, we get a post from himself watching the team into the comfort of his own home. And, you know, you see the team sheet come out. No Drussi on the starting lineup, no Drussi even on the bench. So, of course, you know, he stayed home and tried to rehab that hammy. So if we can get into the injury report just a little bit, Neff, you know, Lil Bisonin, a guy that is a very expensive center back, was an expensive signing for Austin FC when he arrived. But I feel like his position was filled in by the partnership of Matt Hedges and Julio Cascante, right? So there was no worries there. You know, get well soon, Lil, of course, 100%. But I'm comfortable right now with what we see in Hedges and Cascante. But what I want to really dissect a little bit is the absence of Sebastian Drussi, because we saw what happened against Minnesota. Seattle Sounders, the game that just happened, we saw how poor we were moving forward without Drussi. Just, you know, how do you think this team needs to react moving forward if we don't have him against the likes of St. Louis, mate?
Well, I'll start off by saying I don't think the team changes too much Drussi on the field, primarily because the team itself has been functioning pretty much the same as last season. From any tactical point that you want to look at it, there hasn't been much of any change. And the only real difference I see with Drussi being on the field would be them being able to move forward a little more and actually getting shots in. On target, rather than having to wait 60-70 minutes to be able to make that first one. And the reason being, and we'll dissect it more when we talk about the game itself, but you notice how Diego Rubio often had to come down to that 10 spot, even lower, to try to get the ball, to put in pressure. And that's where Drussi is going to be, and that's the function that he's going to have. So other than that, I don't see the team changing much in that aspect.
Now, my main problem with Drussi being out, Neff, is we don't have a guy to put in for him, like just name for name, right? Position for position. You could try to put Danny in Noel. There, and, you know, Wolf said, you could put Noel, you could, but I don't think he'll give you what Drussi does. You know what I'm saying? Like, Noel's Noel, but he's not a Drussi. But he could be if you give him that opportunity. He needs a chance. I'll let you answer to that, right? But just where I'm stuck at right now is the fact that we looked flat, maybe not interested, how Bali says. And maybe we have all the interest in the world. Maybe we have all the energy to try to get downfield. But it seems as if without Sebastian Drussi, this team's clock does not tick. And we better hope, as fans and as media, that Sebastián Durruti is back as soon as possible, because without him, there's nothing to really cover on this team. I mean, we had no shots, no highlights for Austin FC. So moving forward, when we talk about Seattle, we're really just going to dissect the lineup, because without Durruti, I mean, what is it to really talk about? So I'll let you respond to what you were going to say, mate. I'm sure it's on the Noel point.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really more on the Durruti point. It's, you're not going to find a player like Durruti in this market right now of that, of those same type of qualities. And yes, Noel is not that type, but he, as per the position, Noel is probably the one that's better able to give you, you know, that versatility, that moving forward. He's the one that has those qualities. Danny, it's also an option, but the problem with having Danny is that he's so used to playing back that he needs time to also adapt almost again to that role. You know, he said it himself. I mean, he's been doing it for 3 years. He's been playing more defensive. He needs time up front to be able to produce up front numbers.
Now, Neff, I feel like we're spilling into a little bit into the game against Seattle, so we'll just roll right into it, bro. You know, 0-0 against the Seattle Sounders away from home, the first road match of the 2024 season for Austin FC. Now, there was a lot of conversation around this game, Neff. We had an hour Twitter space after the match. It was very late, but the people were still on there. I believe the count went up to maybe 120 live listeners at one point. Last time I checked a couple hours ago, it was at like 500 replays or something like that. So people really wanted to talk about Austin FC after that match. Now, it wasn't just fans. If you were watching along in the Spanish broadcast, they were very critical of Austin FC. Now, it was a night and day to the coverage that Austin was getting in English, the one that I was tuning into. But shout out to Michelle Sanchez, Austin FC reporter. She was mentioning how pretty much the Spanish commentators were just tearing up Austin FC for kind of being spectators in the match, not registering a single shot until the 70th minute. And then when the shot was registered, they had a laugh about it. They said, wow, that registered as a shot? They had a bit of a laugh at the shot that Austin FC had in the 70th minute. So we get into the lineup, Neff. It was a 4-3-3. That's what the graphic was showing on the MLS Apple TV. We had an in-goal Brandt Stuber, which, Neff, I don't know where this team would be without Brandt Stuber. I mean, what a keeper. Underrated guy in the league for sure. Moving forward on defense, we had right back John Gallagher, who has been slotting in there for the past two games with Minnesota. And this one, of course, in last season, he did a job there. And center back position, Neff, we had Matt Hedges and Julio Cascante. Of course, they did a fantastic job on the likes of Pedro de la Vega. And also maybe they did a pretty good job on Jordan Morris, although Morris had more looks. I feel like they neutralized de la Vega pretty well. You know, he was still doing what he wanted to do, but when it came to being in front of the goal, Cascante had some very interesting shots blocked. He had some very interesting interventions. And also Matt Hedges, I want to send a shout out to him for the goal-saving tackle he had on Jordan Morris right in front of the goal. Moving forward, we had Jean Comanich, birthday boy. He is at the left back position. Still looks like he's a little bit groggy, getting up to full fitness. Beetle comes on for him later on in the game. In the midfield, it was Alex Ring. Now, Neff, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Alex Ring was at the 8. Danny was more at the 10, but they were in a double pivot, it looked like, moving forward. And then Valencia was at the back in that, you know, classic 5 position or the 6, whatever you want to call it. I call it the destroyer, right? And then in the attack, we had O'Brien, who's the right wing. Shout out to Khader O'Brien. He was getting real chippy with Nuhu. They had a little bit of a interesting battle going on there between those two. And Rubio, who was getting very heated. He was pushed. Silly foul, was it, by Arriaga, where they were on the pretty much on the sideline. They go for the ball, and then Arriaga shoulder checks Rubio, and he sends him into the Seattle bench, just crashing into some of the trainers and bench players that they had on there. Rubio was very upset. And then we on the left wing, a guy that we're going to talk about here tonight, and not in a good way, and it pains me because I really want him to work out, and it's Emiliano Rigoni. I feel like it doesn't work when he's on the field, when Sebastián Durruti is also not there. We go back to even in the time when we got to the conference final against LAFC. A lot of people still to this day say that Ethan Finley should have been the player that started at the position. Instead, we had Rigoni, but it's 2024, and we're talking about Seattle. And unfortunately, even though I want to fast forward, it's still a lot of the same from Rigoni. So, Neff, I like this lineup. I thought it was the best we could have put out there without Sebastián Drussi. You know, we had those young players on the bench. Noel was out there, right? But based off what we had, I think this was a good 11 to put out there. Of course, they came back home with a point, a very valuable point. We can talk about that here now. But what was your thoughts on the starting 11 that Wolf put out against Seattle?
I'm gonna agree with you. The starting 11 was probably the best that we can put out there, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't think that's where it went wrong. Obviously, and I don't know if you want to go ahead and just get right into the game as it is, but
go ahead.
What really went wrong, I feel, was the players at points looked confused. It seemed like they wanted to do something else, but then just went back to what they were doing. And so I'm not sure that there was a clear tactical perspective to this game. I know they had to have prepared it. And like you said earlier, I don't think it's that they don't have the desire to go out there and win, because they're professionals. Of course, they want to go out there and win. But I think that the confusion in tactics that they're having, the misunderstanding there with Wolf, I'm going to say, because that's you know, the line of order and who puts these players on the field. I think that's where there is some heavy misunderstanding, a lot of confusion. And it just doesn't seem like this team can do much, not only let alone with Drussi or without, but just on its own, like surviving alone. Like, this team can either attack fairly well or it can do what it did against Seattle and defend with its life, but it cannot do both in the same game. And that's very, very, very concerning, because to be a team that, quote unquote, because the way that Josh really wants to set this up is almost as a counterattack team, you can't have that, especially not having any speed whatsoever to counterattack. Now, so go ahead.
Now, on the tactical point that you made, Nef, on the confusion, I agree 100%, because we go back to the instance that really was kind of silly. You can really just label it as that. When Rigoni was exploding, you know, through the middle of the field, he had just done a cheeky mag that the social media team was apparently celebrating as a highlight reel for Rigoni against Seattle. He gets a mag against Atencio, if I'm not mistaken, or the other gentleman that was in midfield for Seattle. But, you know, he's going through the midfield. He sees Alex Ring is kind of, you know, running beside him on the right wing. And he lays off a pass that I think was pretty good. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't far away from Alex Ring. It wasn't fast that he couldn't catch up to. And even Nuhu himself, who's a fantastic left back, you know, he kind of was given the space for the Austin FC player to receive the ball. He sees that they don't even try. Alex Ring doesn't even try to get the ball. And Seattle collects it right away. But that tells me right away, Nef, that there was two different ideas. One guy wanted to counterattack, and one guy wanted to hold the ball and just wait for everybody to come forward and then create the chance. But that's the confusion there that you're talking about that I agree with 100%. Now, there was another instance at the end of the game that I mentioned in the Twitter space last night when Cascante goes down, and he wants to stay down for the last couple of seconds of the game because, of course, you know, being a center back in that match, you have to be proud of what you did and you have to be proud of securing that point. But an attacker like Ethan Finley wants the ball quick to set up the counterattack to maybe get the 3 points away from home after you didn't deserve them. But the counterattack chance was there. It didn't happen. Two different minds, I think, yesterday for Austin FC. And just going back to the point that you made, I agree 100%. I think there was two different minds. One of them wanted a counterattack and the other one wanted to just hold the ball, retain it, and play that, you know, quote unquote wolf ball that everybody likes to mention. But we did also speak with Maiji Cheyenne from Ray Green TV. And he was saying how, if to him, it seemed like Austin FC's plan was to just bunker in, protect that box, you know, protect it, pretty much park the bus. Park the bus is what everybody's going to call it. And it seems like it worked. I mean, not seems, it definitely worked. And he was also saying how Austin FC was most likely playing to get a lucky goal or some kind of goal opportunity and, you know, snatch it up and just defend. Could it be that Austin FC executed that plan to perfection? Of course, they didn't get the goal, but they secured a clean sheet and they secured a point away from home. So, Nef, going into that question, I mean, how do you feel about this point? Because there's a lot of discourse on social media right now, a lot of conversation where there's fans not happy with the point, But there's fans that are over the moon with this point. Now, I went on social media and I said, it's okay to be happy with the point, and it's okay to be upset at the attack and display because there was nothing moving forward from Austin FC. But it's okay. It is okay. You know, we had Tony say yesterday that we're a very fickle fan base, that we like to argue back and forth, and we're night and day on decisions like this. And I agree with him. I agree with him sometimes. But I just wanted to put out there that it is okay to be cool with the point, but it's also okay to be critical about your team moving forward. I don't think – look, there's people out there that try to be right 100% of the time, but Austin FC is going to make you look silly because they really just make you go through every emotion in this roller coaster. So it's impossible to be spot on with Austin FC. So, Neff, I go back to the question. I mean, where are you at with this point?
Listen, just being not being any type of bias and just being as objective as I can possibly be, this is gold for Austin FC. So, yes, absolutely.
You did real quick, you did say on social media, correct me if I'm wrong, you said Austin FC is about to get very lucky.
I said very like four times because Austin, that's what it was. And let's just be clear here. Should Austin FC be happy with the point? Yes, because they shouldn't have had a single point out of that match. Now,
100%.
Now, here's where you can look at it, where I kind of get divided, right? Would I, as a fan, be happy with that? No, because the performance was awful. Like, you can say, oh, the defensive masterclass, and it really wasn't even that. If you really look at it, you wouldn't be saying it's a defensive masterclass if those four goals go in. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they stopped and they still allowed somehow 23 shots to go near goal. Not on target, mm-hmm. all of them, but near goal. Mm-hmm. And as a team that's structured, you don't allow that in a regular game. I understand that, you know, compared to other defensive performances, this probably looked amazing. But you have to realize that half the team was always on Austin's side of the field to have that happen.
Yes.
So that's where I'm like, I don't think it was. I wouldn't be happy with that whatsoever, because if my team got a tie and they were fighting and missing shots, okay, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But that just wasn't the case.
Now, I don't know if it was a defensive masterclass, because for that, I feel like the entire defensive unit had to be on the same page. I think Gallagher was maybe the weakest link last night on defense against Seattle. He was being absolutely just terrorized on that side by, what was it, Leo Chu? And Pedro de la Vega was also absolutely doing what he wanted when he was healthy. He did get injured around the 60 or 70th minute, and Rui Diaz comes on, and we'll talk about what his moment with the Seattle team, how it almost made my heart come out of my chest. But, you know, going back to the defense, you know, I want to say that it was probably Matt Hedges' best game in an Austin FC jersey. Julio Cascante was definitely the man of the match for me. Some people were saying Stuver, but, you know, Stuver, he had maybe two fantastic saves. A lot of them were coming at him, and a lot of them were being blocked by those guys, Valencia, by Matt Hedges, by Julio Cascante. So I want to give the center backs more credit than Brad Stuver in this game. I know some people are going to give it all to Brad Stuver, but, you know, just some quick stats on those two names. Cascante, 90 minutes played, 8 clearances, 3 block shots, 100% aerial duels, and a 7.6 match rating. He was the highest rated player for Austin FC last night. We go to Matt Hedges, 90 minutes played, 6 clearances, 1 block shot, 2 interceptions, and a 7.3 match rating. And then Valencia, who was that destroyer. He had 90 minutes played, 90% pass accuracy, 1 block shot, 3 interceptions with a 7.2 match rating. Those were my top performers for Austin FC last night. That triangle that they were forming in front of the goal really stood strong for me, and I want to give them credit. Now, I don't think it was a masterclass, like you said, 100%, but I think it was a monumental performance by those three gentlemen. Now, can they build from it? 100%, I hope they do. But it's not something to get used to. I will say that. It's not something to get used to, because we see the kind of mistakes that some of those guys, what I just mentioned, have committed in past matches before. So hopefully, you know, it is something of the past. Hopefully they say, hey, you know what, those days are over. Because I also put here in my notes, I go back to how we finally saw what Josh Wolf was saying about the emphasis on defense in this game, right? All preseason, we were hearing how the attack was okay. The real work had to be on defense. The real work had to be done back there. And against Seattle, mate, you say, you know, it wasn't all that of a masterclass performance, but to me, I was impressed by how those guys stood tall back there on defense. Now, of course, John Komenich, John Gallagher, maybe the more weakest link ones, but again, I go back to Hedges, Cascante, Valencia, and, you know, Stuver as my top performers for Austin FC last night. Now, you want any counterpoint in that before we move on to some post-match quotes?
Not a counterpoint, but more of a comment. Mm-hmm. Part of why the defense looked as quote-unquote solid as it did, because those mistakes were still there. You just don't remember them as much because there was less mistakes than previous games. And a lot of it had to do with Valencia being there, because that's what Valencia does. He he destroys plays before they get to the center backs. Mm-hmm. And that's what you remember. But those mistakes, there's a lot of mistakes in the distribution from coming from the back. Like, it still happened. And the proof of that is those 23 shots. Now, with that being said, the team as a whole, I mean, Alex, football critic, you know, shout out to him. He will tell you the first touch that these guys were having, the sequence in playing, the link up, it was bad. And if you remember that game against LA Galaxy in the Coachella Invitational?
Yes, the 3-1. You remember 3-1.
Yes. That, for like 5 minutes, they had great link-up play. And then everything, poof. That's essentially what you've seen again in that first game against Minnesota. You saw 5 minutes where the team linked up great. And same thing here, and then boom, disappeared everything. It's just like everything's thrown to the trash.
Okay. Now, real quick, some subs that came on before we move on to some match quotes here. We had Zardes, of course, he came on for Rubio at the 66. Finley came on for O'Brien at the 66 as well. Biru, Guilherme Biru, the Brazilian left back, he came on for Jean Komenich. Happy birthday, Jean, again. That was minute 71 when that substitution took place. And then Owen Wolf, he came on for Dani Pereira at the 86. Owen Wolf picked up a yellow card in the first foul that he committed. And honestly, just real quick, if we could spend a minute on the refereeing from the Seattle game, because although, you know, you can't say, oh, it was because of the referee that we didn't get a goal or blah, 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 or whatever. No, I'm just saying how poor the game management was by the referee. I mean, there was at least 6 or 7 unnecessary yellow cards that I counted. But it's not all on the refs. I feel like there was a little bit of a mindset of, you know, with the whole situation with the ref, you know, the main core of the refs, they're on lockout and these replacement refs are doing the job for now. I feel like there's a lot of coaching staff and players both where they feel like they know more than the guys doing the job right now. And we saw Jean Komenich, I mean, I don't know if it's in his character before, but I was disappointed with how Jean Komenich just tries to body up or stand up to one of the sideline referees, and he gets an unnecessary yellow card. As a player, you know that you shouldn't do that. That's disrespectful, and it's unsportsmanlike. He needs to be smarter than that. There was also other yellow cards that were flying around for unnecessary moments, unnecessary challenges or unnecessary instances in the match, but also the ref was just giving him out like candy. I was very disappointed with the refereeing last night, not on calls that they missed, but just how they managed the game. I didn't like it, and I cannot wait until we get Ted Uncle and his partners back, because I really miss the old referees right now. Just pay them. Give them what they want, honestly, because the referees, they're just getting worse week by week. They started off pretty good in match day one, but I'm just – didn't like the refereeing display last night. And I don't want to say it's an excuse, but I'm just saying the game management was absolutely atrocious, mate. Anything you want to add on these refs?
I mean, the only thing is, I hope they get paid, honestly, as well. I think it's just a human decency thing to, you know, support these refs and hope they get paid as they should. The one thing I will comment on, though, is that there's not too much of a level difference. It's like you've been watching this league for a while too, and you know that MLS refs, just like these refs, they're a talking point every weekend. and every
Yeah,
match
yeah.
today. And so I'm not saying that it's worth not paying these people, because obviously it is. They're professional. They're FIFA licensed officials for a reason. But I mean, the level has to go up regardless. And I don't think refereeing should never be an excuse regardless, unless it's something very bland and obvious.
All right. Now, right here, I have the post-match quotes from Coach Wolf and Matt Hedges, who spoke to the media. Shout out to Matt Hedges. It's nice to hear from him because somebody commented or sent us a DM in response to the quote from Hedges, and they were saying how it's nice to hear from him, you know, especially hear something nice from him because it looks like he's always in a bad mood or he's having a bad time. And Hedges does have kind of that face, like, leave me alone. But, you know, he did say something very positive on the team and kind of responded back to Will Bruin on what that tweet that he had just maybe last week or a couple of days ago. But, Neff, before we get into the match quotes, I just have a small question for you one more time now. Alex shared a tweet to us, what was it, yesterday or today in the morning, about how Austin had a very Atletico de Madrid kind of match. And sometimes you just have to bunker down and really just hope that you get that point. And hopefully you get that goal in transition, that goal in counterattack. But don't answer it. We're going to come back to that point here. But I just wanted to mention before that I did forget. But did Austin put on a Atletico de Madrid kind of display against Seattle? We're going to come back to that. Now, some quotes here from Josh Wolf. We're going to start off with him. He says this, and this is from Eric Goodman. He asked the question. He got first dibs in the press conference for Austin FC, and it wasn't that many folks. So shout out to the people that did stick around. We heard Eric Goodman's voice. We heard Phil West's voice. Michelle Sanchez was also there, just to name a few. But Wolf says this: it's important to know you come to Seattle missing some guys, certainly. It's a tough place to play. Historically, one of the best teams at home, one of the best teams in the league. It's always going to be a grind, and we've done really well here. I think three wins and a tie. I think he's off a little bit on his stats, but he was pretty close. He also says, it doesn't matter what you think the game will look like, what you come to grips with, it's going to be a struggle. Whether you win the game or tie the game, guys are going to have to grind, put their body on the line. They're going to have to suffer and sacrifice. I think that was on display tonight. It was a really good character point for our group. He also says, I'm not too worried about coming to Seattle and not outpossessing or outperforming Seattle in their own field. They're a good team, one of the best in the league. We've come here a number of times and probably outshot every time. When you come here, you got to land your punches. In the last 15 minutes, there were some transition opportunities. He finishes with this. He says, the guys will feel good about the point. We'll be able to have a good week of training again and look forward to a spirited game against St. Louis. Now, Matt Hedges, he says, quote, I thought the back line, Brad Stuver, and even the guys in front of us, like Johan Valencia, did a fantastic effort. This is one of the toughest places in the league to come get a point and a shutout. I'm very proud of the work we put in tonight. They had some chances, but I thought we defended well. Matt Hedges, very proud of the defensive effort that his team put out. Josh Wolf, happy to leave Lumen Field with a point. I know a lot of Austin FC fans. I put myself in there also in the fact that I'm happy with the point leaving Lumen Field. But Neff, your thoughts on what Josh Wolf had to say, what I just read right now to you, and if you'd like to comment on what Matt Hedges said also.
Soft mentality, brother. And I'm gonna tell you why, because you and I, you know, as observers of the game, it's one thing, right? We can say this, we can say that. And as a fan, you can say, yes, I'm happy with the point. A professional going to a press conference and saying, we're happy with the point, especially with such a weakened Seattle team, that's where the soft mentality comes in. Because as a professional, you cannot be telling your fans, the ones that cheer you on, literally no matter what. You're kind of giving them the message that, you know, yeah, we're this is the most we can achieve. And
But even then, if to those supporters that you're talking about, though, can you not say, hey, at least Austin FC didn't lose against Seattle? We mentioned 23 shots. It could have been 3-4-0, but the team didn't lose. The team gets a point. They go back to Austin with a very valuable point.
the fans can. Absolutely, the fans can. But
For
having
sure,
that
for sure.
mentality as a professional, and mind you, of course, I'm no professional, but I've I've seen enough of this sport, and I've seen so many different mentalities of so many different clubs. And I can tell you this: no team that goes in and finishes a game happy with a tie wins much. And that's just from my observations, what I've seen, what I've lived. You know me very well, Hernan. I hate losing, even pickup games. I'm not saying that I'm right having that type of mentality. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I'm a big winner. But I will always go for it regardless. And that's what these guys should be doing. And that's the attitude. Not, oh, yeah, we leave Seattle with a point. But, hey, injuries are not on our side. I think that's kind of a load of crap.
Now, Neff, you do mention a weak in Seattle side, and they were very weak. Well, just on paper, they had a pretty good showing against Austin, but they had Reed Baker out of a hamstring. They had Stefan Fry, their goalkeeper, out on a hamstring injury. Jamar Gomez out, not due to injury. Nathan, not due to injury, but he was still out. Jao Paulo, his hip kept him out of this game. Braudilio Rodriguez, hamstring out. Albert Rusnak, ankle out. And Raul Ruiz Diaz, he was labeled as questionable, but he comes on for Pedro de la Vega and almost wins it, right? Great technique. I think 9 out of 10 times he scores that, but this was that 10th time, and it hit the crossbar. And thankfully for that crossbar, Austin FC leaves Lumen Field with a golden point. Golden, and I'd even say that we stole it from Lumen Field. That's what I labeled the Twitter space. It might be the name of this podcast, a point stolen in Seattle, because genuinely, that's what it feels like. But hey,
I disagree.
I'll take the point. I will take the point 100%. You know, we stole the point from Lumen, in my opinion. On the tweet that I put out saying, hey, it's okay to be happy with the point. Hey, it's okay to be very critical of this team. You know, the fact of the matter is that we leave Lumen Field with a point. And I hate to say it, but not a lot of teams are going to leave Lumen Field with a point this season. And the fact that Austin FC was able to leave with one, I'm happy with that. And I'm not over the moon with it. I'm not over the moon with it. I'm not okay with it. I'm not going to say, hey, this is what I expect week in and week out. But the situation that we're in, the energy maybe that we left Minnesota with, you know, Josh Wolf says that we had a good second half against Minnesota, but the game is 90 minutes. You know, everything leading into this game was not necessarily 100% against us, Neff, but it wasn't set for us to win. If you look at the predictions going into this game, nobody had Austin FC winning it in the first place. So the fact that we get a draw, because it was nil-nil, I think that's what really stains it, the attacking display. But the fact that we didn't break, we just bent, the center backs put in a great showing, I'm happy with the point leaving them in field. There are individual performances that I'm very frustrated with, and I will talk about Emmy right now after this. But other than that, the point, I'm okay with it. Anything you want to add, bro?
Yes, one first. There wasn't a stolen point because Austin didn't do anything to steal it. It was Seattle lost the point, lost 2 points. They left 2 points on the table, 2 points on the table.
That's fair. That's fair.
First point. The second point is, lost my train of thought, but essentially, brother, it's just you can't go into games like that. You can't.
That's fair.
Oh,
that's fair.
Here's where it was good. The more teams will get a point at Seattle, but they will do it against a better Seattle team, a healthier Seattle team.
That's
and that's
true.
Where you have to that's be true. Critical of your team and realize that, man, they had all these guys out. Because even if they're depth players, those players probably would have gone in and made some type of impact. But other teams are going to have to face a stronger Seattle team to get a tie. And when they do, then what are you going to say about this Austin performance? It's like, damn, Austin just stood there and took it and still couldn't. Nah, bro. It's just.
Now, Neff, some questions moving forward. I wanted to ask about Drew C, of course, because we have St. Louis coming up next. And we can kind of get into the preview now on St. Louis. Now, the question I have for you, and I'll answer it myself first before I pass it on to you. And the question is this. When Drew C comes back, will this team get better? How influential is he to this team? I mean, that second part of the question is kind of irrelevant. We know how important he is to this team. But when Drew C comes back, is this team going to get better? Now, I think so. I really do think so, because we finally see what Josh Wolf was talking about with the emphasis on the defense and you know, preseason, offseason, how they were working for that, right? But when Seba comes back, my train of thought right now is we're finally getting our defense in line. Cascante is finally performing. Matt Hedges is finally performing. Brad Stuber's been doing his thing. But we're looking defensively, at least maybe sound in this game against the Seattle Sounders. We put on a good performance when you're talking about defense-wise. Now, if Seba comes in and gets the attack on check, in check, and we combine that with our defensive unit finally being on par with our attack when Seba comes in, because he changes us 100%, we might have a different story moving forward. I know our schedule is very difficult coming up ahead for Austin FC, but when you insert Seba with the defense that's finally starting to click and work together, I think things can change for Austin FC, mate. Now, I pass it on to you. You know, maybe I sound a little bit optimistic, but I think when Seba comes back, this team elevates levels to where they're at right now. So what do you think?
I think you're over the moon speaking levels. Does the team get better? Yes, it gets better because it's juicy, right? Does it get levels better? No. And here's part of that. You're going to see next game if Juicy comes back where Valencia is going to sit on the bench, and then you're going to see this defense exposed yet again. And it's back to the point that I told you earlier. The defense looked good because they had an extra man in Valencia cutting and destroying those key passes. That's the thing right there. Juicy can make the forward line better, but it's not going to do much.
Now, before I make a counterpoint, if you could turn off your camera and turn it back on for me, you froze on my screen. But you mentioned Valencia. Now, is there a perfect world where we can have Drewsy on the field along with Valencia, you know, Valencia doing the job that he did against Seattle, like you mentioned, and Drewsy doing his duties moving forward as the center attacking mid that really is the whole creativity for this offense? I don't know, because we've rarely seen it before, but I'd be very interested to see if Josh Wolf sees the importance of Valencia against Seattle and hopefully tries to implement that in future matches coming up, because I agree with you 100%. Valencia was very influential and key in the fact that we got to secure the point against Seattle. And I don't want to see him go back to the bench. No. In fact, I'm a little, I don't want to say disappointed, but I'm just a little bit like taken back at how poor Danny looked against Seattle and how poor he looked against Minnesota. Now, you could say maybe he's in a different position. Josh Wolf is trying to move him around or whatnot. But Danny, you know, he's a little bit of a shadow of what he was last season. And I know that's not permanent. I know he's going to come back to the level where he's used to being at. But as of right now, I mean, the midfield, not even Alex Ring, nobody is a lock-in starter. The only name that I have on my team sheet, two names moving forward, is Drewsy when he's healthy, of course. And we don't know if he'll be healthy against St. Louis. But Valencia, just like you said, I think he was very influential, very important for the team. And I'd like to see him play for Austin FC moving forward. 100%. Now, another question that I had, Nef, is what's going to happen with Rigoni this season? Because it's his last season on a guaranteed contract. I believe after it is the club's option to see if they want to extend him or not. But it's just been a poor showing by him. I mean, the situation with Ring, they look like they're not clicking at all. Those are two of our DP players. I mean, without Drewsy, those are two main guys, the ones we're going to look to make a difference in the game. Maybe more Rigoni than Ring because he's more of attacking characteristics. But my day, Rigoni is just not on the level that this team needs him to be at. And with all due respect, I cannot wait until the contract runs out so we can really put that money to use, because it was a failed experiment. All due respect, it was a failed experiment. And any contributions that he did for Austin FC, you know, thank you for that. But this season can't end soon enough to see that contract run out, honestly. And I think I speak for a lot of Austin FC fans out there, how they've just been so disappointed with Emmy in the, not even the start of these two games, just last season as well, the season before that, you know, really since he's gotten to Austin FC, he's never really been comfortable. And you can go back to the success he had, what was it, last year, where he scored, what, 5 or 6 goals, if I'm not mistaken. He looked good maybe as a number 9. But other than that, bro, I mean, Emmy, I mean, 5, 6 goals, that's what we're limiting our DP players to? That's not good enough in this league. Just not good enough at all. So, Nef, any thoughts on Emmy before we talk about St. Louis?
You know, as I've said before, no disrespect to him personally. He's just not. There's a term that they use a lot in Spain, and it's now translated as a former player. And this guy plays like he's already playing those classic games, those charity matches. Like, it's appalling to see.
Oh, that's so harsh there, mate. But I kind of pretty give out, honestly. But because Emmy has just been underwhelming for Austin FC. And like I said, I hope nobody takes this the wrong way, but it's just sports reality. It's just business. And Emmy has not held up his side of the bargain based off what he's being paid, the kind of the role that he has for this team. DP players have to be a hit, and he has been a miss 100%. I cannot spin it any way, any shape or fashion. Emi Rigoni, I'm sorry, brother, but you have to go soon. Hopefully you find a club, but it can't be in Austin. It just cannot be. And maybe that's what Rodo Borrell
I
was
have a
talking about when he
theory
says,
there.
just super quick, maybe that's what Rodo Borrell was talking about when he says the mess that he inherited and when he arrived at Austin FC was just truly remarkable. But go ahead, man.
I have a conspiracy theory that you believe in the butterfly effect, do you?
Yes.
I believe if Rigoni doesn't get to Austin FC, Austin FC could have been at least in the MLS final that year. I genuinely believe it.
If you look at the stats, and they've been pointed out by Jorge Iturralde on Club Deportes, and he was criticized for it, but he put out Emi Rigoni's stats since arriving at Austin FC, how many goals we were scoring before and after, and it's in black and white, ladies and gentlemen. It's right there for everybody to interpret. It's stats. I cannot give false narratives with stats, and the numbers are there. We're better when Emmy is not on the pitch, and it sucks to say it. It's no disrespect to him at all, but he's just not that guy. Now, if we could please move forward to the St. Louis predictions, mate. We play them. If I'm not mistaken, they're our next opponent, right? Let me just double check before I give the fans false
Yeah, I
information.
believe so.
Yes. Okay, so March 9th, St. Louis comes to Q2 Stadium in Austin, Texas. Now, before they have to play us, they've also played New York City FC. They beat them yesterday 2-0. New York City FC had a red card, of course. They've also played against Real Salt Lake, where they drew 1-1. That was February the 24th. I'm sure that's their MLS opener. But they also have two more games that Austin FC has not played this season, and that's in CCC, the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They beat Houston Dynamo 2-1 on February the 20th, and then on February the 27th, they lost to the Dynamo 1-0. So Austin FC is definitely coming into this game fresher with more rested legs. Now, if Drewsy comes back, I think Austin FC has a bit of a chance against St. Louis. But without Sebastián Drewsy, the chance is out the door, and we're probably going to see another Seattle kind of match where it's like, hey, bunker down and hope that Cascante, Valencia, and Matt Hedges has another, just monumental performance, like I said, because it can be world class, but monumental. Any predictions on your side, Nev, for the St. Louis match?
Not any pretty ones, no. I just don't see Austin getting this one. I don't see it. St. Louis has good depth, and even Austin at home. It's hard to see because you gotta remember Juicy's gonna be coming off of an injury, so he won't be necessarily 100% right away. And so, the way with the type of game that St. Louis plays, it's very hard for me to see it. Even if Austin decides to box up and stay in on their half of the field, it'll be very hard for me to predict an Austin win. I think best case scenario, it's another Seattle type game, like you said, and maybe a draw.
Now, it is important to note that Josh Wolf did not confirm 100% that Drewsy is back against St. Louis. They're still taking it day by day, seeing how he feels, what he's looking like. He has been training maybe by himself, but Josh Wolf said that he's not 100% ready to go against St. Louis, and it's not confirmed if he's ready to go against St. Louis. So before we say, oh, this game is going to be different because Drewsy is going to be there, we could have another Seattle match, just like we said, without Sebastián Drewsy. Maybe we see Noel. Maybe we see Noel, Nev. But as of right now, if Drewsy doesn't play, I see another draw. If not, St. Louis takes the 3 points away from Q2 Stadium, and we're going to have another rowdy fan reactions. And it's not going to get a little easier because, other than St. Louis, we have Philadelphia coming to Q2. We have to travel to Orlando City, play them, although they just took a beating with Inter Miami 5, what was it, 5-1, 5-0, something like that. Anyways, we still also have to play FC Dallas in this month in March. And that's a Texas Derby. It's going to be a hard-fought battle. But things do not get easier for Austin FC. So I'm predicting a draw or a loss if we don't have Sebastian Drussi. The only way this team wins is with Sebastian Drussi at the wheel. The captain has to be back. He's our Pedro de la Vega. Any shape or form, he has to be on the field for Austin FC to be successful. It is what it is. Now, St. Louis recently played New York City FC with a 4-4-2. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if we adapt to that lineup, how we're going to, present our plan, what kind of tactical plan, I guess, we're going to have against St. Louis. And hopefully it's something that works, because multiple fans say this. The league has this figured out week in and week out. People out coach us. Teams come in and do what they want at Q2. So hopefully we get Drussi Dior back, but we'll see what happens. Neff, your score prediction.
3-0 St. Louis.
No, not like that. 2-1. 2-1, 1-0. It can't be 3-0 at home. It cannot happen. No. No way.
It helps, I hope I'm wrong.
I hope so too. I hope so too, mate. Now, Neff, before we go into the European segment, we're going to chat a little bit about what happened in Spain with Real Madrid and Valencia. You know, one popular topic, of course, in Austin FC fan base is the Wolfhouse situation. I mean, if we don't perform, if Austin FC doesn't perform in the next 5 matches or so, I mean, Wolf came into the season in the hot seat, according to some national media pundits. Not very much for Rodo Borrell and the ownership, but for the fan base, he's been in the hot seat for years, I guess. And I mean, do you see him maybe being out this season based off the poor start that Austin FC had so far in 2024? Of course, a golden point, but if we're being real, it has been a poor start for Austin. Wooden spoon contenders.
Oh, absolutely. That being said, look, I've been extremely critical of Wolf for a while now. And I don't see them getting rid of him if they didn't already.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, for the sake of this club and this team, because they're different, I do hope he gets shown the door sooner rather than later. With that being said, though, the problems don't start or end at Wolf. I mean, you still have a very bad roster. And, nothing, like I said, nothing personal against the guys, but Wolf is a start. And okay, when you start, then you have quite a bit of bullet points to get through.
Now, Neff, just real quick, some quick news that we do want to brush up on before we get into the European talk is the Open Cup news that we received. Pretty much, this is what it is. Austin FC 2, FCito, will represent Austin FC in the U.S. Open Cup in the 2024 season. Now, it is important to note that it was a league decision. It was not up to the club at all, if I'm not mistaken. That needs to be said. That needs to be known 100% because there was a lot of attacks on the FO, on the ownership and whatnot. But there was a league decision to send Austin FC 2 to the U.S. Open Cup to represent the organization. Now, there were some MLS teams that did get selected to send their first teams. Those are Atlanta, Dallas, the Dynamo, which is the defending champion, LAFC, Real Salt Lake, San Jose, the Seattle Sounders, and SKC. They're sending their MLS teams to the Open Cup. But the MLS Next Pro teams that Austin FC 2 falls into, like I said, FCito, Carolina Core, Chattatunga FC, Chicago Fire 2, the Colorado Rapids 2, Crown Legacy, their Charlotte's team, Minnesota United FC 2, LA Galaxy 2, New York City FC 2, New York Red Bulls 2, and the Portland Timbers 2. Those are the teams, the Next Pro affiliates that will be playing the Next Pro Cup. Now, later on, we did get more news where it's this. It says, Austin FC 2 will face off against 4-0 FC in the first round of the U.S. Open Cup on Tuesday, March 19th at 8 p.m. Central Time. The game will be held at Palmer Field. Now, that's via U.S. Soccer. You can check it out at ussoccer.com. So we get confirmation that the game that Cito will play is going to be at Palmer Field. Now, I cannot wait for that atmosphere. I know that there's going to be some boycott, some protesting maybe going on. As people that cover this team, you know, we're going to be there to try to capture the atmosphere, try to capture the analysis of the game. We're thinking about doing fan reactions after. So I'm with everybody that's very upset about the US Open Cup decision. But, you know, as media, as people that cover this team, I feel like we have to be there. So we're going to see what the fans that are there say about the decision to get Fcito in the cup. But hopefully we talk about a win after that game. But we'll see. Now, Nev, we reached an hour on Lost in FC content. Now we can get into the European segment, the side of things. Now, we mentioned the Manchester Derby. We were watching that game earlier today in the morning, watching it with Eric and Football Critic and everybody that was on Discord. Shout out to Tucker, who was just laughing at Haaland for missing a chance right in front of the goal. But later on, he gets his. City won it 3-1. They beat Man United. United was up 1-0. Rashford had a fantastic goal, but it was not going to be held on. We knew City was going to come back. But the main thing that I want to talk about here tonight in the last couple of minutes that we have on the podcast is the Real Madrid-Valencia situation. Like I said earlier, it made the rounds all over the world. It got to Pat McAfee for crying out loud, and he made a tweet about it. But pretty much, I said earlier, the robbery of the century. You know, maybe it's a little bit exaggerating, but it was just blatant robbery what we saw by referee Gil Manzano, a guy that I know has received a lot of criticism in the past, but I didn't think he was that bad before this game. After this game, my opinion on him changes 100%, and I hope there's an investigation that goes into it. But we see that when Brahim Diaz receives the ball late in the match, in that play that everybody knows what I'm talking about, the whistle goes to his mouth. He takes it away. The ball is in the air, and he blows the whistle. Jude Bellingham gets a header on it, puts it into the back of the net. At that point, it's 3-2 for Real Madrid, a comeback win, another remontada for Los Blancos. But Gil Manzano says, game over. 2-2, it's done. What was your thoughts, Nev?
Shame. Lots and lots of shame, because I don't know that this has ever happened in football history. It's a lot of years of history to go through. But it's shameful that a ref, an international ref nonetheless, who is supposed to be the best ref in Spain, which is what he was given this game specifically, ends the game in the way that he did. If you want to talk about signs of corruption and stuff like that, which I'm not accusing him of being corrupt, but I am going to accuse him of being shady as hell at the very least, because I've never seen a ref stop the play with the ball in the air in an obvious opportunity to goal. Never have I seen that. We've both played the game. You don't stop on a clear opportunity at goal. You don't stop it there. With that being said, that's extremely shameful. The red to Bellingham was also shameful. I'm not going to say much. I really just can't say anything more. La Liga really should be embarrassed, because this is the product that they gave out to the world. This is La Liga.
Now, I've been a huge defender of La Liga for years. You know, and whenever Messi and Chris was there, whenever they were there, it was a lot easier to defend because a lot of eyes were there. You know, it was the league to watch. But now they're not there anymore, and you really have to kind of reach to find the qualities in this league. You know, right now, the dominant league, whether people like it or not, but it is the EPL. It is the best league in the world, 100%. I'm here to say it, right? But La Liga, they cannot have this kind of display and still try to call themselves one of the best leagues in the world, because it's just disastrous. And really, what I want to say, Nef, is I want to just send a shout out to the people that say that the league is dangerously prepared for Real Madrid. The folks that say that the refs are always on Real Madrid's side. The people that say that, you know, Real Madrid's money, Florentino makes the call. Where was the call? Where was the money? Where was the help here? You know, it just shameful comments that people like to make against Real Madrid really just blew up in their face after this poor showing by Gil Manzano. It was in the Mestalla, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yeah, it was there because Madrid had the purple. But it really just goes to show how uneducated some of those comments are, to be very frank. And I really like to see, I hate the fact that Real Madrid was involved in this situation, but I love to see those fans that accuse Madrid of corruption, you know, in the recent weeks in La Liga. Where was that corruption today? Where was that help? Where was that? It was not present. And of course, the comments aren't there anymore. Of course, the comments are shush, shush. People go back into their caves. But just goes to show how Madrid is not getting any help from these referees. And if anything, they're trying to stop Madrid from running away from this league. And as controversial, Nef, as scandalous as this game was, brother, it really didn't put that much of a dent in Real Madrid's title hope, because they're still at 66 points. Girona in second place with 59, Barcelona in third with 58, and Atletico de Madrid with 55. Madrid's still running away with it. But if they would have won this game, title hopes would have been pretty much over for everybody chasing Madrid. But of course, we get a scandalous performance by Gil Manzano, and you and I are talking about a robbery of the century today. But I mean, is there anything else you want to add on this game before I talk about the muchachas de la selección mexicana?
Look, it's yes, it's shameful and all of that, but at the end of the day, we also have to be critical of our team, right? Because this whole situation arrives from two huge mistakes at the back from our team.
True.
We gifted those goals to them, and we put ourselves in that position. So as far as criticism for my team, I will have criticism for my team for allowing to go two goals down the way they did. It was horrible. But the difference is, it's just disgusting. It really is. And just like you said to those about those fans, I want to see their reaction when if that ever happens to them, if they ever get the whistle blown on them the way it was on us, because a lot of them just love to talk shit just because it's Madrid, a taste of our own medicine. But you know what? At the end of the day, we didn't pay rent for 20 years, and we're not preparing. We don't have any benefit of doing so if that was the case. So and in regards to say, that's all I have to say on that.
You're good, man. We don't got to spend much more time on this absolutely atrocious performance by Gil Manzano. Now I do want to send a shout out to Leverkusen in the Bundesliga. Shout out to Xabi Alonso, 10 points clear of Bayern Munich. Really looks like they're going to win that league. A gaffer, a coach that is really just impressing so many people worldwide. And I didn't know Xabi Alonso had that in him. I knew he was going to be good. I knew he was going to do good in the Bundesliga. But to lead Bayern Munich by 10 points, you know, kind of taking it from their hands. We know how locked the Bundesliga trophy is for Bayern Munich. But Leverkusen shocking the entire world. So credit to Xabi Alonso and Leverkusen out there. But Nev, before we end the pod, I want to send a shout out to the Selección Mexicana Femenil, because they pulled out a massive result against the U.S. Women's National Team in the Gold Cup that's currently going on right now. Now, they beat Paraguay 3-2. Keeper had a masterful performance. I think saved the penalty, if I'm not mistaken, as I was seeing on social media. But the USA game, now, what a performance by those girls. Now, the goals that were scored, people were comparing the first goal to Giovanni Dos Santos' goal against the USA in the Gold Cup years ago. We were both kids when that happened. I remember that day like yesterday. They were down 2-0 and came back 4-2. And Gio scored probably one of the best goals in Mexican soccer history, selección-wise. But goals by Lisbeth Ovalle and Mayra Pelayo lifted Mexico to a stunning 2-0 win over the U.S. women's national team Monday in the final group play of the CONCACAF Women's Gold Cup in front of a crowd of 11,000 at Dignity Health Sports Park. This is interesting. This win was just the second for Mexico against the USA in 43 games, the first coming nearly 14 years ago in Cancun, and the result was well deserved, 100%, as you could say. But just wanted to give them a little bit of praise, because, you know, like I said, this kind of result doesn't happen And as much as I want my daughter to play for the U.S. Women's National Team, I gotta send a shout out to las muchachas de la selección mexicana, mate. I mean, do you want to send them any praise their way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the women's sport is growing day by day and
It
season,
really
year by
is.
year.
It
So,
really is. Yeah.
and so it's nice to see that there's a that the Mexican national team, women's national team has gotten a result. The U.S. national team for the women's has been a standard of football, in its division for as long as it has for a reason. I know it's starting to decline a little bit, but I'm glad to see. I'm glad to see them being able to stand up to it.
Now, before we end the pod, Nef, I forgot to mention how my Chivas de Guadalajara got destroyed by Cruz Azul this weekend, 3-0. Interesting result. Didn't deserve to lose like that. But we move, as we say here in Austin. Now, Liga MX standings, Monterrey is in first place. Cruz Azul is in second. They're tied for first, actually. Alex's football critics, Pachuca, he says Salomón Rongoat, which is a very funny little nickname there. They're in third place. America, Brian, and all these teams there in fourth. Toluca, Tigres, Pumas, Necaxa, and then Chivas, ninth place, still in the playoff picture. And then Querétaro, León, and San Luis. Santos, now if you're Santos, just barely missing out of the playoff picture, but there's still more games to go. So we'll see what happens. I mean, anything you want to mention on Liga?
Oh man, look, if any Austin FC fans wants to see what a struggling, mediocre team can do just changing their coach for a proper one, Santos is a great team to follow in that aspect.
Nacho Ambriz.
Santos just Nacho Ambriz is fine. Like he has his four games in last the previous two have turned up as wins, and the team is with the same players, it's looking so much better, more solid. Look, I'm just saying there's hope for teams that want to have it. And some teams kind of want to win and some others kind of don't. So maybe
Well,
some soft mentality there.
hey, Will Bruin, chill out. That's what I'm gonna call you from now on. Will Bruin, Neff Bruin. That's your new nickname. But everybody, thank you for sticking around with us for another episode of Top Flight Pod. We talked Austin FC against Seattle. We were very critical, and I guess maybe you can say that we're happy with the point. I know I am. We mentioned the European talk. Shout out to Las Chicas de la Selección Mexicana. Europe robbery in El Mestalla. And of course, we ended here tonight with Liga MX chat. But I'm Hernan, your host. Shout out to my Gene for being here tonight. And we look forward to speaking to you all here soon. We got St. Louis coming up next. Fan reactions will be there 100%. And we're almost back in studio. I thought we would be back this weekend, y'all, but promise we'll be back. We'll be in there next week. So stay tuned for that. I want everybody to see it. Can't wait. And we'll see you soon. Have a good night, everybody. Be safe.